From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, the Trump administration making some changes this year that have the potential to upend Illinois' economy. There are now some projections showing just how much the state could be hurt. Also, the governor signs a law regarding vaccines. We'll talk about that and more coming up here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus, and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest is Illinois Public Radio's Statehouse reporter, Mawa Iqbal. Mawa, good to have you back on the show with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Mawa, there is, as I mentioned, more reporting out there on the potential impact of some of the federal budget cuts, the tariffs that have been put in place, and a lot of this is still speculation. So I guess I just wanted to mention that here as the start of the show. What are we hearing right now? What is the possibility of the effects that Illinois' budget could have here going forward because of some of these actions?
Yeah, Sean. So there was a report done by the Illinois Economic Policy Institute recently that found that the federal budget cuts happening, you know, at the federal level could essentially reduce economic activity in Illinois by $10 billion each year by 2029, so in about 3 years. The most significant impacts would stem from changes to Medicaid eligibility because more people would be likely to lose coverage of these new requirements. It'll also affect hospitals who rely on patients who are on Medicaid. The governor's office says it's a broad impact. That there was an executive order that Governor Pritzker had signed a couple months back that basically directed all of the state agencies in Illinois to essentially analyze how Trump's economic policies, specifically the tariff policies, are going to impact different sectors of the economy in Illinois. And they found that, you know, in addition to the overall economy being put under some pressure, there's also unemployment claims will be up statewide by 16% year to date and 23% since July. The average Illinois household faces about $3,400 in additional annual costs. Hospitals will experience additional costs and expenses per staff member. So it's really just a lot of different sectors in Illinois that the state is saying is going to be hurting from some of these policies.
Yeah, of course, we saw recently the Trump administration, Charlie, cut back some money for transit projects, SNAP benefits. As mentioned, we're kind of still waiting for that. And then you look at tariffs as well. I mean, agriculture is one area that's really getting hit by some of this right now. We're not sure where this is going when it comes to the corn and soybean farmers and others, how they're going to be able to handle this as well. I mean, all of this just makes it difficult. And that's the point I'm trying to make here, is that it's difficult for lawmakers and a governor to handle a budget, which we are now about halfway through the fiscal year, when all of these unknowns and all these uncertainties still keep popping up and we're just not sure what's going to happen.
The question is, what is the impact going to be? We already know what's happening and what's going to continue to happen. And the projections vary in how much this is going to hurt the state of Illinois. And the Economic Policy Institute, I think, did a really good job of analyzing these different programs, some of which were part of that big package, Trump's package that passed earlier this year to preserve the tax cuts for the rich people at the expense of public service programs. And in terms of the jobs loss, it would be like 100,000 fewer jobs in the state over time because of the different changes that have been made. You mentioned, Sean, that money for transportation has been frozen. This is money that the state thought was pretty much guaranteed, that they'd signed the contracts with. This is for the extension of the Red Line in Chicago, which is the main north-south CTA line. And right before Biden left office, the state and the city, the CTA, thought that they had signed an agreement that money would be released. And then Trump decided, no, we're not going to release the money. And that jeopardizes something like 16,000 jobs. And the bottom line, the report said that the state is going to have to probably increase revenue if it wants to preserve these programs that are being jeopardized by the cuts. One of the things I thought was interesting, and this is something we've mentioned before, we've known for a long time, Illinois is what's called a donor state. And that means we pay a lot more in federal taxes than we get back in federal programs. And if you don't count the expenditures related to the pandemic, according to the report, the state paid $5 billion more in federal taxes than it got back from 2015 to 2023. And so we're 46th in the nation in return per tax dollar. And so the problem is that if we want to keep these programs ourselves, then we're going to have to come up with the revenue to do it.
Well, Charlie, let me ask you this, because we've seen this before, of course, when a new administration comes in at the White House and may change some things. But is this more unprecedented of what you're seeing as far as Trump administration has done a lot of things in a less than a year of being back in office. But have we seen I almost call it the rug pulled out from you if you're the state of Illinois and many other states trying to figure all of this thing out. Is this unprecedented from what you've seen?
Yeah, from my perspective, it is. I've never seen an administration come in with the stated intention of basically dismantling the federal government's social programs, doing it in education, doing it in research, doing it in the environment. And it's trying to turn back all the progressive initiatives that were enacted in the last 4 years under former President Biden and implement Donald Trump's vision of what would make America great again. They mentioned, for example, that we're doing away with the clean energy provisions, and the calculation by the Institute is that by eliminating these clean energy tax credits, it really is going to have an impact, particularly in rural areas where there's more space to build wind and solar projects. And they expect that the loss of these tax credits for alternative energy are going to decrease the state's gross domestic product by roughly $2 billion and eliminate 22,000 construction jobs. And so that's an area that no other administration succeeding the one before it would have done, or dismantling entire departments, federal departments, doing away with the Department of Education, for example. I can't recall any other successive administration taking an axe with such abandon to the federal government as it has existed for many, many years.
Well, Amawa, also the governor, I think, has been well aware of these concerns going forward and the uncertainty that this puts on the state budget, not just for the current budget, but going into next year. And he backed a few months ago now put in some restrictions on spending at the state level. He told his agencies to hold back some money. That's still in effect, right?
Yeah, this is something that is, like Charlie was saying, it's not going to go away, anytime soon. Actually, one of the main anxieties that a lot of the lawmakers had last, this veto session, so the most recent session that happened, I guess 2 months ago now, one of the issues was just how do we address some of this federal economic uncertainty. It's hard for a state to craft a budget when there's all these economic policies that are being introduced at the federal level that have these sort of broad, really wide-ranging effects on Illinois. We were talking about the tariffs. I remember a couple months ago I did a story about some of the soybean farmers feeling some anxiety around this too, because Illinois is the top exporter of soybeans in the country, and China was the one of our biggest buyers, and so for Trump to come out and put these blanket tariffs on China, it does put a lot of soybean producers in Illinois at unease. And I think, you know, it's we're just going to have to see what this next upcoming spring session brings, you know, how lawmakers decide to work with what's happening at the federal level, what even happens at the federal level. So we'll see. But it's definitely, yeah, I can suspect that this will be an issue that we keep coming back to, we keep revisiting for the remainder of the administration.
Well, another issue that seems like we talk about quite a bit has been ICE activity in the Chicago area especially, but really happening in other parts of the state. And Mawa, some of that has involved the use of rental vehicles and being made where those are being made to look as though where those are not able to be identified as easily. And the Secretary of State, Alexei Janulis, has weighed in on this. He is says he's concerned about how these are being used right now. Fill us in on what he's saying and what's happening there.
Yeah, essentially, Alexei Janulis came out a couple days ago with this video on his Facebook where he was talking about how his office has gotten just like hundreds and hundreds of complaints from members of the public over the past few weeks, saying that they're seeing ICE agents, you know, renting cars from like rental car companies like Hertz, like Budget, Enterprise, you know, Ace, and they're tampering with the license plates all in an effort to kind of, you know, disguise their vehicles so that they're, I guess, harder to track. And so Alexei's office, essentially, they conducted an investigation. They found that, or they were able to confirm that one of the cars did, in fact, have their license plate swapped by an ICE agent, that this was a 2026 Chevy Tahoe that was rented from Enterprise. And so essentially what the office is saying is that, you know, even though these are ICE agents doing these actions, the rental car companies themselves would be held liable. So the Secretary of State's office sent out notices, official warnings, basically, to these giant rental car companies saying that, you know, if you have ICE agents who are coming in and renting your cars and swapping or tampering with your plates, then you would be held liable. We would revoke your license plate. You know, what will institute a penalty, a fine. And I actually, when I was reporting on the story, I reached out to Department of Homeland Security because the Secretary of State's office essentially issued them a cease and desist letter. And so DHS in response said, you know, like our agents were following federal law. And according to the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution, federal law can trump state law. And so, you know, you might say that it's illegal to swap plates in Illinois, according to Illinois law. But essentially what DHS is saying is that we, our agents can do whatever we want, you know, for the purpose of carrying out their federal mission. And their mission is, of course, immigration enforcement. And it's funny, you know, at the end of the statement, they included a little line that was like, the Secretary of State should be thanking our agents for the work they do. So it's another, I guess, just another example of the Secretary of State sort of butting heads with the federal government. You know, we had an issue like this come up a few months ago where the Secretary of State was saying that automated license plate reader data was being tapped in and used by ICE agents and other federal immigration agents. So I guess we'll see what actual like enforcement power the Secretary of State has. You know, that the Supremacy Clause does add a sort of another layer of complexity into the issue.
You know, police have to follow the law here in Illinois. I have to follow the law. You do too. It doesn't strike me that this really impedes their ability to do their work by basically having their car be able to be identified.
Well, I would agree that there is a supremacy clause, but the supremacy clause does not cover everything. There's also in the Constitution an article that preserves certain rights for the states. And I think licensing motor vehicles is not a federal responsibility. And I think one of the things that triggered this, and Tribb had a story about this, where there was an encounter where a woman was filming one of the ICE raids, and the federal agent told the woman, "You can record all you want. We change the plates out every day." The object, I think, is because ICE came in, they came in with their, basically their camouflage flak jackets. They were masked. They didn't have any identification. And the purpose, as much as actually trying to round up people, I think, was to just put fear into the hearts of folks. and to try and intimidate people. And one of the way you do that is to be unidentifiable. And what Janulius said, and this is a quote from him, he said, "Let me be very clear. Swapping Illinois license plates is illegal, period. And no one, including federal agents, is above the law." I guess if the feds won't cooperate, Janulius always has the power to just revoke the registration for that particular license plate, so it can't be used. It's not valid.
Well, let me move on to another action that took place this week. This was Governor Pritzker signing into law a measure regarding vaccines, Charlie, and the ability of the public to access those vaccines. It comes at in a timely manner here, because we're seeing action at the federal level to start to pull back some vaccine recommendations. And that's exactly what this is all about, is trying to create a specific vaccine guideline format for the state of Illinois. So what does that mean for the person who just wants to make sure their kid's up to date on vaccines, or maybe they want to get the vaccine? What does it mean for them?
Well, I think what's going to happen is that the state, through the Department of Public Health, will provide state-specific guidelines with the input from our state immunization advisory committee to doctors, nurses, public health professionals. And the state guidelines would say, don't pay attention to what the feds are saying. Here's the best scientific evidence that we've been able to compile. Here are the guidelines for Illinois. These are ones you can rely on. I think one of the important parts of this particular law is that it requires insurance companies to pay for these vaccines. And so the insurance company can't say, well, no, we're not going to cover the vaccine for your kid because the feds say it's not needed. And interestingly enough, the sponsor of the bill was Representative Bob Morgan, who's a Democrat from Deerfield, said that this is very timely now. And here's his quote. "We've relied on the federal agents and the federal system for trusted medical guidance, and it's been eviscerated. The trust is gone. And I'm pretty sure the medical community is going to be pretty solidly behind whatever Illinois recommends."
Mawa, this was a situation. I've talked to several people. I know several people who are Republicans, support Donald Trump. This is one of those areas that they're not always in agreement on, though. This has some Republicans, conservatives who say, yeah, we didn't like what happened with the COVID vaccine, but when it comes to the measles vaccine, we're all for it. How did the debate in the legislature, was it pretty much along party lines, or did you hear some of that bipartisan disagreement?
You know, it's interesting because the bill passed on party line vote. And if I recall, like, I didn't really hear too much from Republicans who were kind of speaking in favor. It seemed like that they were largely opposed, but essentially for the political undertones. But, you know, I will say, too, that the law follows an executive order and that Pritzker had signed back in September, which basically directed the State Department of Public Health to find its own vaccine guidelines. And that this is essentially after the Food and Drug Administration withdrew approval of COVID-19 vaccines for children and pregnant patients and other people from other groups. So this is, I mean, you know, the vaccine issue in Illinois, I feel like it, like, you know, like we were saying earlier, too, that, like, ever since COVID and you had this big showdown in the legislature with Republicans walking out over COVID guidelines, right, it's keeps coming up. And now, especially with RFK Jr., who's come out to be quite anti-vaccine as, like, the head of the U.S. Health and Human Services, I think it's just going to keep coming up as an issue. But it is interesting, though. I have heard from some Republican lawmakers that when it comes to not so much COVID, but like some of these other vaccines, like the measles and mumps and chickenpox vaccines, that there tends to be some sort of crossing. But as far as, like, you know, when they were taking the vote on this back in the fall veto session a couple months ago, I don't remember hearing any sort of opposition voiced, at least on the floor, publicly, right? Maybe privately, that it's a little different, but
Well, speaking of legislation and getting legislation passed in the state of Illinois, Mawa, you reported on this week. There was a survey done, and it ranked the effectiveness of lawmakers in being able to get legislation through. And this is a little controversial. People that I've heard from who weren't sure how these rankings were done, or they didn't agree with them in some ways. But fill us in on this.
Yeah, this was a study done by professors at the University of Virginia and Vanderbilt University. And they essentially, what they did was they looked at the year 2023-2024 General Assembly, and they just went through each state lawmaker and looked at how many bills did this lawmaker introduce, how many of those bills made it out of committee, how many of them got action in a second committee, how many of them were called up for a vote and passed the chamber. And then essentially, really, how many of these bills were signed into law by the governor? And so what they found was that occupying the top spots were the four leaders. So you have the House Speaker Chris Welch, Minority Leader Tony McCombie, Senate President Don Harmon, and then Senate Minority Leader John Curran. And one thing I will say about that, those four lawmakers' scores is that in Illinois, when you're a leader, and particularly a Democrat leader, so if you're either House Speaker Chris Welch or Senate President Don Harmon, you know, they will often file just like a bunch, like a bajillion shell bills is what we call them, to essentially like be placeholders for when like a more substantive bill comes up after the filing deadline and they want to get that passed. So they'll attach it to one of these shell bills. And of course, if Senate President Don Harmon or if House Speaker Chris Welch is named as the chief sponsor of the shell bill, they also then become named the chief sponsor of this big substantive bill that will most likely get called up because they also, you know, have a say in what bills get called up on the floor and will most likely get passed. And so I will say that the top four, and Republicans do this as well too, but so I'll say that the top four scores are a bit inflated, but what we did was we looked at some of the more rank and file Democrats to see if there were any like members who were not, or and Republicans too, who are not leaders or were not in any leadership positions, if they were found higher on the list. And there were actually. So for the Republican side, we talked to State Senator Sue Rezin, and it was interesting because, you know, she represents this pretty rural part of like north central Illinois. But she's quite moderate, and she says, you know, she's willing to work across the aisle. Sometimes she'll even like give some of her bills to a Democrat and have them be the sponsor if she thinks that the bill will have a better chance of passing that way. Mm-hmm. But she's very much like, you know, to me, there are some party line issues, like abortion access is one big one, you know. Gun rights issues are a big one for her too. But then there are many other issues like mental health for children, AI, school issues, school related issues that she says sort of transcend party lines. And so she is more than willing to work with her Democratic friends to get stuff passed. Also talked with State Representative Kelly Cassidy. She's a more progressive Democrat from Chicago. And she kind of said the same thing, too. She was like, you know, like oftentimes, even though we are in the supermajority, it will take a lot for me to try to convince my fellow more moderate Democrats to buy into an issue that I'm presenting. So she said that it's taken a lot of coalition building, a lot of trust, and a lot of just like centering people, you know, like constituents at the heart of what she's talking about. So she says that whenever she puts a face to an issue, and it does a lot in like humanizing it and getting her colleagues to buy into it and to vote for it ultimately.
Charlie, just about a minute here, but I wanted to let you weigh in on this as well.
Yeah, I thought it was, in a sense, it was a pretty superficial survey. And I say that because anybody who's around the legislature for a long time will know that your influence depends on the issue at hand. And I've not covered the legislature since before you guys were born. But in my time, there were certain people on both sides of the aisle that would get up on certain issues. If the question was on pensions, there was somebody in the House, somebody in the Senate who were the experts on those issues. And when they got up to give their two cents worth, the other lawmakers would listen. Now, if a pension expert got up to say something about mass transit, people would continue reading the newspaper, drinking their coffee or whatever they had in the mug, and ignore the person. And again, Ma, well, you know this a lot better than I, and you could probably say, well, yeah, in education, here's the guy you pay attention to, or this woman really knows her stuff on the environment. And I think to really do a rating of how effective people are, I think you have to take that into account. It's not the number of bills you introduce. And as you said, leaders introduce shell bills. I liken shell bill to a boxcar. The boxcar leaves the rail yard, and it's empty. And it goes through second reading, still empty. Passes the first house, still empty. Introducing the second house, still empty. Goes through second reading, second house, still empty. Reaches passage stage in the second house, and suddenly it's loaded up with something, and it's passed as a full boxcar.
And it's time now for our notes from the field. Mawa, we'll go to you first.
Yeah, so today I'm working on a story. It looks like the Trump administration is requesting SNAP user data, so personal information on SNAP recipients in Illinois, specifically immigration status. So it looks like the state has until Monday to respond. So I'm going to try to see if I can talk to someone with the state just about this request and, you know, what they want to say to the state, or I'm sorry, to the Trump administration.
All right. And Charlie.
Well, this is the start of a new month, and that means that the flash index for the last month has come out, and it ticked up slightly in November, rising to 101.7, and University of Illinois professor emeritus Fred Geertz, who reported the index, reports it every month, said that although growing more slowly than the national economy, Illinois mirrors the rest of the nation by remaining surprisingly stable, unaffected by the government shutdown, tariff volatility, and uncertainty about the future Federal Reserve leadership. And also, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, the fiscal brain trust for the General Assembly, pointed out that November was a very good month for revenues deposited into the state's general funds. Revenues in November reached $3.75 billion, which is $476 million, 14.5% above the amount collected last November. For the year, the fiscal year, through the first 5 months of the fiscal year, our receipts are up $951 million in the general funds, a gain of roughly 4.9% compared to the same period in FY25.
An update on a case out of Sangamon County, a former county sheriff's deputy, Sean Grayson, who was just recently convicted of second-degree murder in the death of Sonia Massey, a Springfield-area woman. Grayson's attorneys are now arguing he needs a new trial. They say the presiding judge in the case committed an error allowing the jury to hear Grayson's remarks about Massey after the fatal shooting. A Sangamon County judge is expected to sentence Grayson at the end of next month, and he could be ruling on the argument for a new trial at that time. That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Mawa Iqbal with Illinois Public Radio. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.